I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is A Lot to Learn with Austin Rogers. For the guy who knows everything, he's still got a lot to learn. Without further ado, here's Austin.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good night. I have no idea what time it is because it's a podcast and people listen to podcasts whenever they listen to podcasts. Today is really, 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 really fun because I have my very good college friend, Lucas McCann, who is a, Lucas, who is a design strategist and lecturer at the Stanford University, like the Ohio State University. And today we're going to talk about a very loaded term in today's culture and buzzworthy nomenclature. The word is design. Ooh, indeed. Welcome, Lucas.
Thanks, Austin.
This is going to be super fun.
Yeah, it's awesome to see you.
Yeah, we're out here in sunny San Francisco, which is actually incredibly rainy San Francisco. Apparently, we brought the weather with us. Doesn't rain for 364 days, but rains the last two that I am here.
You're welcome.
Thank ye. Okay, Lucas, lecturer at Stanford and design strategist. And there's that word, design. Yeah. What is design? I think of design as I'm looking across my hotel room and I see a door handle. Someone thought that out and gave it to an industrial manufacturer who fabricated it. That is design to me. I'm looking at the knobs on my mixing board and the shape of my microphone and the structure of the body of my MacBook. Those, that is design to me. Am I right? Am I wrong? Or is there more?
You are all three, let's say.
Okay, I'm so right and right. I'm right, I'm wrong, and more.
You're right, you're wrong, and more, for sure. And I think of those three things you pointed to, the door handle, the knob, and the body of your MacBook.
Yep.
Obviously, the third, one of these kids is doing their own thing, and that's the MacBook.
How so?
Well, I mean, the knob on your mixing board is probably a standard knob.
Oh, it's just an off-the-shelf thing.
Yeah, or even if it's not off-the-shelf, maybe the specs and the tooling for it were made some other time, or maybe there isn't much consideration given into making that knob different than any other knob.
Because that knob already works.
I've seen that doorknob before, haven't you?
Because that doorknob works.
Right. And so, yeah, or because it's cheap to make. And actually, I made sure to have Austin give me a little notepad so I could take notes. We're going to get back. We should talk about the Industrial Revolution, which I'm sure I know is a topic near and dear to your heart.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's where we are right now.
Right.
And I think we're seeing Lucas's design mind in, in work right now because no one else has a pencil and paper on the side of him, and he's just drawing dots.
I
don't know what the dots mean, but we're going to figure it out.
Yeah, that's right. So one thing, why I said that doorknob is that design or isn't it design? When you said, you know, Austin's got a lot to learn with Austin Rogers. What are we learning about today? And you suggested, oh, what about what is design? And my first response was,
what is design?
What is design? And that is actually a much more complicated and loaded question than you might think. And I think you hit on the heart of it. Is design making stuff? Is it deciding what that stuff should be like? Or is it even deciding what stuff to make in the first place?
What should be full stop?
Yeah, and you said that doorknob is that doorknob because it works. And that may be true, but it also may be true that it's a very cheap doorknob to make.
Right.
And that's why I said the Industrial Revolution, there's an interplay between what is good for you, the optimal thing for you, the user, to meet your needs and do it, or what is good for me, the producer,
To sell.
Or to just get through there.
Or maximize profit.
Yeah. And the thing that why I'm so interested in design is because we as humans live in this world where everything around us is the product of human decisions. And that means, you know, sometimes people will say, oh, I'm so stupid, I couldn't figure this out. You know, I had a car that had weird door handles, and every time somebody couldn't get out of the door, they said,
oh, I hate this door handle.
No, they didn't say that. Oh. You would say that.
Oh.
They said, oh, I'm stupid, I can't get it. It's like, you're not stupid. Somebody decided to make the doorknob like that. So if you can't figure it out,
it's not intuitive.
Right.
That's the maker's. That's the maker's fault.
Right. And there may be things now that, you know, and I think we've seen this with the sort of tech boom. Like when Uber started, it's like Uber is so much better. It's so much cheaper than cabs. You put the cabs out of business. Okay, now why would I have it be cheaper?
Yeah, well, that was Uber's business model.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so
undercut, now we're ubiquitous. We charge what we want.
It's like if we live in an interconnected ecosystem of designed stuff and me making the stuff, at what point is it not, if it's not in my interest to make it good for you, then guess what? Your life is going to suck.
Because you don't care. And why do I care about, why do I care about the consumer?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So
I think I got a little excited.
You got a little excited.
Reground me.
Reground you, which is back to it.
Right.
So we actually did one of the most cliche things on earth before we sat down for this. We opened up the laptop and Maria read to us what design is.
Yeah.
And it is to execute according to plan or build according to plan or something.
Rogers.
According to plan.
That is exactly right. But with my little pen and pad finished here, I wrote down the definition.
Which was?
To create, fashion, or execute. To create, fashion, construct, or execute according to plan.
Right. And all those things are totally different. Create, fashion, execute. Those are all different things. But according to plan.
Right.
Is that what design is? It's the plan?
Yes. I think in the no one can really agree on the term, but I think in the largest sense, it's that plan, that intention, and that's what design is. Because you could say, is it art? Is it engineering? Is it just manufacturing? Is it making? But the unifying thing is it's according to plan. And I was saying before that I think that design is what makes us human.
Right.
Right now we're engaging in language, right?
Yeah.
We have abstract thought.
Yeah.
There are other animals that have things that are like language.
Yeah. Crows communicate.
Right.
You know, dolphins have names for one another.
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, they go nee dee dee, and that's your name and mine's back 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 back.
All right. Well, back 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 back. Let me get back to the point. what I was saying is the ability to think, man, I really would like to go over the other side of this river and I'd love to not get wet.
Plan.
How could I do that?
Right.
Hey, there's some trees over here. I'll chop them down, put them over there.
Right.
I got a bridge. So it's like that abstract idea. Like, what if there was a future that's different from now where I could walk across this river?
Right. Which is the fruition of the plan.
Right. And so what design is to me is saying, man, it'd be cool if I could just walk across this river. All right. How am I going to do that?
Right.
Mad activity.
Man, it would be cool to open this door. Okay. So now I have to fashion something to open the door.
Right.
Okay, so design is the fruition, the culmination of not the plan. It's the culmination of a goal. The plan is how you get there, thus the design, right? So actually,
sounds fair.
I think this definition is missing the goal, right? It's all of this, blah, 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 a plan to accomplish an ultimate goal.
Right.
Open a door, move a slider, or cross a river.
Right, and one other thing I wrote down on my pad here is needs versus solutions.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is something that is a real crucial element to understanding design.
Now, this is when we get into your design strategist thing.
Mm-hmm.
Needs versus solutions sound like very easy words to wrap my head around, but I have a feeling that you mean different things by them.
Like so many things, actually the simplest version of it is true. But when you ask people to start designing things and making new stuff, they'll get needs and solutions screwed up all the time.
Okay.
Classically.
So define them. Or give me an example.
Here's an example. You know the classic kind of inventor's challenge, like build a better mousetrap?
Mm-hmm.
Well, mousetrap is a solution.
Right.
So build a better mousetrap, you're defining that end goal as a solution already.
Right.
If I said, devise a way to rid an area of mice.
That's different.
Right. So now I can have poison, a cat, robotic mice that infiltrate mouse societies. Like, I can have all different kinds of things.
Reroute lava. That right. gets rid of the mice.
Sure. Exactly.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Right. So here's the thing that we teach in design thinking class that you remember. Needs are verbs, solutions are nouns.
Got it.
So if I say, I need to open the door, is different than I need a doorknob.
Right. So I need to kill mice.
Yeah.
Right.
You need to rid an area of mice.
I need to rid an area of mice. Right. And the solution is the mouse trap
right.
or rerouting lava.
Right.
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 Both of them will rid an area right. of rodentry. Rodentry? Is that a word?
I mean, it's also like...
Rodentia.
Who knows if that will actually work? I mean, I just do want to say lava... Let's not presuppose that it will work. We need to test that.
I'm team lava all the way.
Collateral damage be damned.
Hashtag team lava.
Yeah.
Hey, solution.
I love it.
Solution accomplished.
Let's cafe press that. I want a team lava.
Hashtag team lava.
Team lava shirt.
Okay. So let's stick with the mouse trap. So our needs is to rid the area of the rodents. So we devise solutions. The mouse trap is one of the solutions.
Right.
How do you balance these two? Who's right? The end user or the designer? Or again, is this a malleable definition?
Yeah. I mean, well, I think so. There's different sort of lineages, I would say, in design thought, if we want to call it that,
uh-huh.
like schools in a way. There's kind of like a California school and a Chicago school.
Oh.
I don't think that's not something that people formally say. That's like my perception.
Right.
Because in the last 20, 30 years, design, which was traditionally like we think of like industrial design, graphic design.
Yeah.
It was like a technical discipline back
yes.
when things had to be done by hand.
Yes.
So it's like applied art
yes.
or you know, creative engineering.
Yes.
That was like the traditional idea of design. Can they hear air quotes?
They can hear air quotes.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So then since the 90s, design, business, anthropology have gotten all mixed in together.
Right.
So you were asking who's right, the user, the specifier. I mean, ultimately, in our mousetrap example, it's like if the mice are gone.
Does it matter?
Well, and we would say that's why I said lava. You're like, hey, I got rid of the mice. I also burned down the building or whatever. I also caused an earthquake. that would be one of the things like, well, if we wanted to be formal about this, ooh, man, I just thought of another cool thing.
Go.
You said before, like, a person made that doorknob.
Yes.
And a big thing that has always bugged me, because design came into the sort of American consciousness, like, people didn't really think of design as a thing so much formally. And then in the 90s, it really kind of boomed.
Yeah, we got Philippe right? Stark and stuff
exactly.
like that. And the Dyson vacuums.
Yes,
and all
Dyson.
Of a sudden, you're looking at these things. And then you also look backwards and you're like, oh, that cool blender from the
right.
50s had awesome design.
Right. But we didn't really have in the mainstream, we didn't have a word for it. And what I was going to say is you said, we had Philippe Stark, we had Michael Graves, he had the Dyson vacuum. And there was a real idea, okay, if you imagine Dyson, James Dyson, who I met, by the way, they show him like in his workshop, right? Like fashioning a part.
Right.
Which is this idea that like James Dyson, like Michelangelo,
yeah.
has crafted this vacuum cleaner.
Yes.
Because it's easier for us to think of him as a craftsman or an artist or an inventor.
Than is to think of
the idea that like one person cannot make a vacuum cleaner.
No.
That's impossible.
No.
You need an electrical engineer who is a specialist in electrical engineering.
Yes.
You need somebody to go over to China and make sure that the draft angles on those parts are correct.
Right.
Right? So it's a big human endeavor. And so a lot of this design thinking that's not going to apply to other business problems is like, how do we efficiently get everybody to sort of like agree on things or make decisions effectively and without stifling creativity? And so there's lots of tools around formalizing that process of figuring out which is better, the lava or what's our other one?
Mousetrap versus lava.
What about mine is a robotic mouse that infiltrates mouse society and convinces the mice to go somewhere else.
Now I'm going to shoot that down because that is that's super complex. I don't think we have the technology there yet.
Yeah, the
right?
sunk cost. That's true. The AI on the mouse.
Exactly, yeah. and also that's incredibly intense electronics and programming and coding and an army of people to design that for what ultimately is probably disposable. Because if that robot mouse is just supposed to rid the area of mice and takes them somewhere else, it's probably going to take them off a cliff into the ocean. So there goes that robot mouse.
That's where you're wrong, because it's a service model. You actually just subscribe to the mouse. There's only one mouse, and it goes from town to town.
There's a designer.
Pied Piper.
There's a designer thinking right there. You're like, all I have to do is do it once,
exactly.
And then I just lease out that one mouse over and over again.
But what you did, so in being in like ideating, that's what we
oh,
the word
God,
for
I
it,
hate,
right?
I hate that word.
I'm sorry, that's the word.
Oh, do you
that's
actually use it?
Absolutely.
Do you mean it or do you cringe every time you say it?
You know, like, remember the movie The Abyss?
Of course I remember The Abyss.
Remember how when they had to go deep down, they would be in that, like, liquid oxygen?
Yeah, they
first it felt like you were drowning,
but you're like,
and then your lungs
got
used to it.
And you let it go? Yeah, once they're like, relax, and it'll be okay.
You can think of me as working in a pink soup of jargon.
Okay, so you've let it
My
go.
My system has adjusted
you've
to
let it.
It
go, and you're just inhaling it.
Well, and there's also, like, some of those terms are useful because, like, that's what it means, you know? So...
Okay.
Anyway, this is a personal. That's
language evolves. Well, that's a whole different.
That's
topic.
Totally fine. What I was going to say, I'll try and go easy on it. Because yes,
jargon away. I need something to make
tacky,
fun of you
though.
About. Yeah.
Shit. What I was going to say is, what you did just there is you said, "Hey, that mouse problem, your robot mouse isn't going to work because here are all the kind of constraints, or here are the problems with that solution."
Yeah.
And the idea is that if we are like working together well, we could say, well, you know, how can we turn those constraints that you said into, maybe we never would have thought of like, oh, it's actually a service model or something. Like if you are always thinking like, well, how could I invent sort of past that? Then you can turn those constraints into inspiration.
No, I understand. And yeah. I think during that, you're honing in on this nebulous definition of design, because we've now surpassed the fact that it's a robotic mouse. And now we're like, ooh, well, what's the intent of the robotic mouse?
Exactly.
And then you're like, oh, what's the cost analysis of the robotic mouse? And now we're getting into this holistic view of design where you're like, okay, the robotic mouse is almost irrelevant. It's how the use case scenarios of the robotic right. mouse is what the actual design of it is.
Right. Right. Exactly. So there's something that I wanted to say to you before. Is this what, are we doing the right thing?
We are doing the totally right thing.
This is awesome just to hang out and talk with you.
I know. We haven't seen each other in a couple of years.
Yeah. We should wear headphones every time.
Isn't it great listening to our own voice?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really awkward when you take
weird.
The headphones off,
yeah.
But you get used to it pretty quickly.
Well, what I was going to say is, and this may be very abstract, but that's what I wanted to get to, is a huge part of our discipline is toggling between abstract and concrete as a concept.
Right.
That notion, like I said, needs and solutions, abstract to concrete is crucial for doing this. So I would say, here's my concrete solution. It's called RoboMouse 2000. It has these specifications. This is what it does. Here it is. I'll draw a picture of it. Here's its specs. That's it.
Yeah.
Something that you can picture, that we can, and you can look at RoboMouse 2000 and say, hey, that'll never work. It's going to cost us $5,000 to make that thing.
Yeah.
And then I would say, well, okay, but, you know, how can I abstract up RoboMouse 2000? Well, what RoboMouse 2000 does is infiltrate mouse society and convince the mice to leave somewhere else.
Yeah.
Now if I say, well, now, so infiltrate the mouse society and convince them to go somewhere else is actually an abstract solution.
Right.
It's a solution direction.
Right. So RoboMouse might not be the viable solution
right.
for that, but you actually came up with the solution is infiltrate mouse society, convince them to leave.
Right. And then we might be like, look, RoboMouse is too small. All right, you know, actually it's RoboCat or whatever. Like but RoboCat and RoboMouse maybe are still in the same abstract solution direction.
Right. But still we're going for the same thing, which is infiltrate mouse society,
right.
convince them to leave.
So the same thing. So I wish there's a diagram that we use all the time. That has analysis on one side. Sorry, jargon again.
Oh, no, analysis,
basically it's like,
analysis is a word.
But actually, it's not appropriate in this case. It's like understanding what the world is like.
Okay.
Like being like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah.
and understanding it deeply, insightfully, in an open way.
Right.
Just taking in information in the world. And the other side of the design process is synthesis, totally not right. Making stuff, making changes to the world.
Yeah.
So like, you know, in our river example, like one is just looking at the river, considering it, and then the other side is the sort of solution side. On both of those sides, you have a concrete and an abstract realm.
So it's a very design specific like SWOT analysis.
Well, no, it's a process where you would go from the realm of observations.
River is there.
Yeah, and it's important to be concrete because you could say like, oh, you know, I understand our customer base. What they want is convenience. And it's like in the world of observations, it's important to be concrete. So you would say, what did they actually say?
They want it delivered within 2 days.
Right. Or they said, I just don't want it to be a hassle. And then if you translate from I don't want it to be a hassle to they want convenience, that's an interpretive act.
Right.
And so when you're observing things, it's important to stay concrete.
Right.
But then to free yourself up to be creative, you need to abstract from your concrete observations into the realm of interpretations.
Got it. So you have to set a baseline. And the baseline is this is the consumer wants X, and X is very is
needs.
Yeah, is needs. The consumer needs X.
I mean, wants is good too.
Which is hopefully in the world of concrete quantifiable,
measurable at least,
observable. There we go.
Yeah.
Wow. Who knew design?
It's a minefield.
Who knew design was so full of like parsing semantics down to like I'm like
I know
all these words mean the same thing more or less, but they don't because and actually that's why the beauty of English.
Yeah.
Like we can say these words. I'm like that was the better of the same word for what we're trying to get at.
I should say too that. You know, we were talking about how to introduce me. One of the things that I do at my current company is...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I am in charge of methods training. And I'm called a content lead. So I'm basically supposed to be as nerded out on this stuff as anybody.
Right.
So there are plenty of other people.
Yeah.
That would be like, this is totally overkill. What are you talking about? Just to put it in perspective.
I had a total aside. Mm. Should I go down to it? But like,
I don't know.
I think.
There's so many things we could talk about.
Well, I was going to talk about like the English language and design language, how English has so many synonyms for so many things, but so many other languages are just so much more simple that you could just say, you know, there's one word for cloud, you know, and you just go cloud and everyone's like, oh, it's a cloud. We got it, right? And English is like, well, is it a wispy cloud or a puffy cloud or blah, blah, blah cloud?
Cumulonimbus.
Cirrus. Stratocirrus, yeah. Right? Is design easier in other languages because they might not have as many synonyms for things as English?
I hope not.
All right. Let's not go down this road. This is way too much of a thought exercise.
Yeah.
So we've ascertained that to start upon the creative journey of the design that you've observed.
Yeah.
And then from the observation, you've moved into abstraction.
Which is interpretation.
Interpretation.
Yeah.
So we've gone objective to subjective, and now we need executive. Now we need to execute.
Directions.
Directions.
So if you think of these four quadrants of that, do you know a 2x2?
It's a piece of wood.
No, no. Oh my God.
It's a dimension of wood.
So we can also talk about other stuff that's not this esoteric stuff if you want, but I will talk about
a two. Well, let's get esoteric and then implement a concrete example of it.
Great. So a 2x2 is like an XY graph with two axes.
Yeah.
So oftentimes I might say, hey, I understood all of your customers, and they go between being meticulous and sloppy and rich and poor. So you got meticulous poor ones, you got meticulous rich ones, or whatever.
Yeah, rich,
or maybe
sloppy.
It's even a map.
Yep.
You know? So that we traffic in that kind of stuff a lot.
Right.
So that's unimportant. Forget it. Scratch it from your mind. We were just talking about a sequential four-part process.
Yes.
That starts with observations.
Observations.
Which are concrete and are about understanding the world.
Yes.
Then we ask ourselves, to go up, to get from concrete to abstract, you ask yourself, why?
Why?
To get abstract to concrete, you ask yourself, how?
How?
So we say, I saw these people doing this thing.
Yep.
They said they don't want hassle. They said this, they said that. Why?
Yep.
And then I'm into the phase of interpretation.
Interpretation.
Okay, now I got to flip over to the other side. I've understood the world. Now I got to make a change to it.
Yep.
I'm making changes, but I don't want to just jump to RoboMouse 2000 yet.
Right.
I want to get to Rid an Area of Mice or Infiltrate Mouse Society, which is a direction.
Yes. And then we move down to the how.
Solutions.
Okay.
Observations, interpretations, directions, solutions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. It only took you 20 minutes to get there, but
that was only 20 minutes, felt like a year.
Oh, it's a while. Yeah. Okay. So now you've mapped out basically
and
I'm assuming when how doesn't work out, we repeat. Or do we backtrack?
The idea is that this is an iterative process. In practice, you're hopping all over that all the time.
Oh, okay.
Right? You're toggling. It's only just like conceptually, it's good to say, where are we right now?
Right.
Does it behoove us to be really concrete, or should we force ourselves to get more abstract here?
Right.
Are we just talking about, like, so that I think is design thinking, is thinking on purpose.
Right.
I sometimes imagine, you know, like an assassin would have the guitar case filled with guns or something.
Yes, yeah.
What if you had a case with different brains and you were like, all right,
I want this brain
be
in
creative.
Right now. Yeah.
Now I'm going to be really
right. But now I got to get back to objectivity. Take that brain out, put the next brain in.
Yeah, so that's the practice of toggling between these different things, knowing should I be expanding or funneling down?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So we've got this quadrant system where
that's design thinking.
Right. Yeah. Design thinking, but which will get us to concretely designing something eventually.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So we're moving through this, and sometimes back, and sometimes forward, and sometimes hopping around. But ultimately, we want to sort of move through this course.
Right.
I see. I think we should, and then how?
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Okay, that's really cool. And you can apply this to multiple disciplines.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why we're in this fuzzy definition of design.
Exactly.
Because when you get into things like UX, like, is that designed?
Oh, definitely.
It is. But it's still not what I'm thinking of as design.
Right, exactly. I mean,
I'm still thinking design. I'm primitive. I'm a 20th century person, and I'm still thinking as objects, as things. But design touches everything. Before we started, you're like, why is that tree on the sidewalk?
Exactly.
Someone picked that tree.
Yeah.
Yeah. That tree is only there because someone said that white birch should be on that street corner.
You could say it would be there by design.
Yes, exactly. What is there out there that hasn't been touched by the hand of design?
Oh, my God.
Or is there literally nothing? Did anything ever happen by accident?
Definitely. I mean, and I think that's when I was talking about the doorknob and the knob on your mixing board. There is some stuff that just gets made. So there is, like, what is the level of thought and consideration put into it? And what is, like, you know what? This is just how we always made it, or we had this one laying around, we'll use that.
Well, like, so this knob on my, so I'm going to play with my trim.
Okay.
Trim is what sets gain. So I'm like, gain. See how it gets more trebly?
That's cool.
But on my other mixing board, this knob is knurled. It's got little ridges on it. I'm assuming it's for maybe wet weather or utilizing with gloves.
Better grip.
But this one doesn't. So someone made the conscious decision to put this unknurled one on this kind of mixing board, but my other mixing board has little ridges on it. Are they both stock items, or did this company decide that they wanted to make their own? Does anyone know?
To go back to... To get back to semantics, when you just said someone made the conscious decision, that is probably not true.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
An accountant?
Maybe they made a conscious decision.
Or an accountant.
Maybe they did. And maybe somebody said, well, I like this one, or I've always preferred knurled knobs. You know, it's not necessarily true. And I think I've been a design consultant working, you know, with C-suite of Fortune 50 companies, working with the federal government, stuff like that. And my when you're a kid, you think these big companies or the government, even if I don't agree with them, they have a plan.
Uh-uh.
Maybe there's some evil conspiracy, right?
Uh-uh.
No.
No.
Everybody who is at the helm of spaceship humanity is just a person who has to wake up in the morning, decide what to eat, and it's this series of human decisions that make up the arc of history.
Right.
Right? And so, I think a lot more things are... Everybody has to make a decision. Everything is a result of human decisions, which means that it is up. We could change it if we got our shit together.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that those decisions have been made
in a conscious, willful manner.
Right.
Yes. It could have been just take the thing off the part shelf. Okay.
And that's what I wanted to say about the Industrial Revolution.
Okay. Yeah.
This is a good one.
Yeah.
So think of when I was saying before, design is what had made us human. There were bone shards and stuff from Africa 140,000 years ago with little hash marks on them, right?
Yes.
At some part, we started to wear clothes or, use spear throwers and all these things. So
Adelatals.
Yeah, that's a great technology.
Yeah.
Well, that's a design, right?
Yeah.
That's an innovation.
Oh, yeah.
You can throw it farther than
And I believe
hand.
That's pre-bow.
I think so.
I think the adelatal comes before
sure.
the bow.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, that was one of the reasons that people think that the Neanderthals died out during the Ice Age.
We had the atlatls, and they did not.
They never even had throwing spears.
Yes, they used thrusting spears.
They just
used because
thrusters.
We were from the archaeological record. We could tell by their musculature and stuff like that they were probably stood. They probably were stood probably stood in an aggressive stance and thrusty.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Did you see that PBS documentary with Andy Serkis recreating the Neanderthal?
No.
Okay, it just
I'm
came
totally
out.
Into that
okay,
shit.
It just came out. We're going on a total aside, but this will get back to design because Andy Serkis and Weta, which is Peter Jackson's, they took archaeological record, recreating the musculature, and they had Andy Serkis and his motion actors learn how to walk like a Neanderthal, and then they CGI'd them with the highest tech CGI, and that's some of the things they figured out. Neanderthals were natural sprinters and could grossly outrun Homo sapiens, where they could crush us in a foot race. But they couldn't keep running.
Right.
We keep running.
Yeah.
So the Neanderthal could go tackle a big prey immediately, could just go get him down immediately and stab him to death, right? We could just be like, yep, we'll get it when we get it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another one of the things on it. You got to check this one out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That sounds awesome. Well, okay. Well, what I wanted to get to is the Industrial Revolution.
Industrial Revolution.
But when I went back 140 million years ago.
Yeah.
About
140,000, yeah. Maybe 280, isn't that much? That's sort of, it changes all the time. We keep doing this.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But
we went to a really good college, you stupid people out there.
yeah, exactly. Read a book.
Read a book,
or
dummy.
Something.
Google something.
Alexa, what's this about?
Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, so the Industrial Revolution. So all the way up to Industrial Revolution, and I think about this all the time, our world that we sort of take, we're like, this is how things are. You know, you got planes, you got factories. Like, it's just a tiny sliver of human history.
Yes.
Right? And so even in modernity, most of the products that you or I would have had, your shoes, your chair, your clothes, would have been made by hand, you know, in general. So a craftsperson would say, you're taller, you're shorter, your chair might be different. specified right. differently, right?
But it's still the platonic chair. It's still the chair.
Yeah, well, let me get to the Industrial Revolution.
Okay.
So there was no reason, if you were making something for one person or even just making things one at a time, you know, obviously there's been mass manufacturing and efficient economies of scale, but before you were able to make things industrially, everything would sort of be handmade. So it, you know, if I'm making something by hand, I'm making a shoe, I'm going to consider the shape of a human foot.
Right.
Now I'm now a factory owner, and I'm like, man, I can now make shoes that cost 1/10 of the cost of a handmade shoe.
Right.
Or, you know, people really like shoes with broguing on them. I just have a broguing press.
Yep.
So you can buy a broguing shoe, brogues for 1/10 the cost.
Yeah.
In the Industrial Revolution, they were selling shoes where the left and the right shoe were symmetrical.
Yes.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Imagine wearing shoes that where the left and the right foot are not the same or are the same.
Right. Well, it's called a last.
Right.
A last is the footprint of a shoe, and mm-hmm. there's a left last and a right last.
Right. So what if there was only one last?
Yeah.
And that is – I just think about that because it's producer-centric design.
Yes.
It's not user-centric design.
No.
And
that's easy, though.
It could only exist because it's like, yeah, you know, you might want those other shoes that fit better, but they cost more, or they don't have the decoration, those kind of things. So we're now in the, like, still the detritus of that change over to industrial manufacture.
Right.
And as manufacturing has gotten more flexible, or as more of our stuff is digital.
Yep.
Or as, like, everything is global, you have your choice of anything. User-centered design has come back into the mix as a point of differentiation.
Right, because back in the day, you'd go to Tom the Cobbler, and he'd make the shoe for you.
Right.
But that was all he would make. He'd make your shoe, and it would take him 2 months to make your shoe.
Right,
it's your shoe.
Right, because it's going to take him 2 months to make the shoe anyway, so you might as well make it to fit your foot.
Might as well make your shoe, right?
Exactly.
And then we've got the Industrial Revolution. Okay, wait. I just thought about something. Mm. So we've got Tom the Cobbler, and we've got, you know, Lucas the Wainwright, and then we've got, you know, the blacksmith, right? And let's go back to the old, like, you know, the old-fashioned-y doorknobs where it's a thumb part on one end, and it raises the latch on the other side, and the other side is just a hook, and you can raise it that way. So one side's a little bit ergonomic because you got a handle and a thumb, and the other side's just the hook, and you raise it that way. And either way, it just raises a horizontal bar outside of a notch, right?
Yeah.
That's been the door for whatever.
Sometimes.
Centuries, right? I just thought of it. All of this concept of that door handle is an oral tradition. Someone at some point in time taught someone who taught someone who taught someone who taught someone who taught someone, and no one bothered to innovate that door handle because that door handle just was.
Yeah, it worked.
Right? And now we're past that oral tradition thing. So there isn't the like when you built a chair because you saw a chair because your apprenticeship taught you the chair, but someone taught him the chair who taught him the chair who taught him the chair. So the actual act of innovation was never actually seen because someone innovated, but no one knows who and when and where it changed. But now we see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see like there is a name. There's a name assigned to the person who made that new door handle, and you're like, oh, that's a Philippe Starck door handle. Mm-hmm. I know that one. I don't know where I'm going with that, but I'm just trying to think of like design through history where it just was, and now it isn't anymore.
Yeah. I mean, and I think like, so before when I was talking about the intersection of design, business, anthropology, right now, and it's like, most of the things that we have are made by huge companies, right? Maybe small companies, but they're for-profit entities.
Right.
So there has to be a business reason for them to make stuff that is pleasant to use or works well.
Right.
And that's kind of how you get into it. It's like if it's our point of differentiation that like, yeah, ours does the exact same thing. Our smartphone has the same processing power and the same number of pixels, but the interface is more intuitive.
Right.
Then it's like, okay, it behooves us to spend lots of money on making sure that the interface is intuitive.
Right.
And arguing over the semantics and taking a long time to do it because we believe that people will buy our phones.
People will buy that.
Our shareholders will be happy.
That's the differentiation and the selling point.
Yeah.
Oh my God, there's so many layers to this. My mind's.
We can go in a different direction too.
I know. Let's bring it back to the. Let's bring it back to the tangible.
Yes.
Let's go through.
How?
I don't know.
No, I'm just saying.
That's how? Oh, we haven't gone to how.
That's right.
We haven't gone to how.
Right.
We haven't even gone to direction yet.
Right.
So we've now conceptualized and we've moved into the abstract. Let's give. As the design strategist, what direction are you giving your designers to move on to?
Well, interestingly, one thing you might have noticed if we went back and listened to ourselves talking about RoboMouse 3000 or we need a name for your lava concept. What is it called?
Dante's Mouseferno.
Yeah, Dante's Mouseferno. Dante's Mouseferno. Great. What we did when I was talking about the directions, sometimes the quickest way to do it, if you're creative, is be like, man, Dante's Mouseferno, and then say, okay, how does that work?
Okay, so you can hop diagonally down.
You can go down and then go back up.
Right, but I don't think Dante's Mouseferno is a good idea.
Right, sure.
I mean, it's a cool idea.
Anyway,
it's spectacular. It's visually stunning.
So it's funny because I think over the course of this conversation, you've had the same sort of odd trip that I've had over the course of my design career where I wanted to do design because I wanted to make cool tables or something like that.
Yeah. That's what I thought I was getting into. The world's coolest toothbrush.
Right, yeah. Like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to make a better toolbox or whatever. Something cool like that. And I sort of got shunted into this whole world.
Right.
That's kind of been happening to us over the course of this conversation. But the point is, the most fun part is coming up with cool ideas, coming up with beautiful designs, coming up with cool stuff.
And is that the direction or is that the how?
That's the solution phase.
Right. Okay. Let's go with the direction phase.
Yeah.
Now we've observed, we've abstracted, and now you as the strategist have to give direction.
Right.
What are you just like, go do? Minions, go unto me and do.
I mean, obviously that is a complex question because that gets into the whole world of strategy and how is it implemented inside organizations.
Right.
The thing that I will say that is like, I'm thinking of what are these sort of like key concepts. A thing about strategy is if you can succinctly name it, like, so a lot of what we're doing is like writing sentences. We call it like a strategic imperative or design principle, almost like a slogan that is like a placeholder for it. You're like, whoa, that I think I know what you mean, but it's kind of complicated.
Right.
Even if I said rid an area of mice.
Yes.
What I don't want to say is, hey, we're thinking about what the direction should be and we should kind of like get rid of the mice, but in like the whole place. Because every time I say that to one person and they say that to somebody else. If I say our strategy is rid an area of mice. Write it down. Put it on a poster.
Yep.
When you tell somebody, say, rid an area of mice, and they say, get rid of all the mice in the area. It's like, no, 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 no.
Nope.
Rid an area of mice. So really being intentional about writing those different things, those like slogans, is the way that you encapsulate directions.
Okay. And then thus, everyone on the team is on the same page. It's it's a mantra and it's a mission statement. And oh my God,
because it takes so many people to do something,
right? And so you have to have everyone. Oh, you're in essence when you give direction, you're creating like a mind space. You're creating. Oh God, what is it?
What you want to be doing? I just made a little paddling motion.
Oh, paddling!
And make sure that everybody's paddling in the same direction.
Okay,
because all of those different creative people, the electrical engineer, the marketing person, all of those different specialists. They're going to have to, when they actually make all this stuff happen, they're going to have to make trade-off decisions. This one is heavy and durable, and this one is light but a little flimsy. They need to be empowered to make that decision. And when person A makes their trade-off decision, person B makes their trade-off decision, you like those decisions to line up.
Right, right. And ultimately, they go, before you make a final decision, you go, does this rid the area of mice?
Right.
Yes.
Man, I'm tripping. This coffee's got me going.
Little bit of the buzz?
Yeah.
A little bit of the Pike's Place rich blend? I don't know. Okay. So now we've got everyone rowing in the same direction. Now we got the how.
Right. Yeah. Now that's the cool part.
The cool part. Yeah. Let's get to the cool part.
That's the cool part. And that's the part when you said before, oh, are you a designer? And it's like, I think the people that I work with now would call me a designer.
Yep.
Because I'm more in like a strategy firm.
Yep.
The people at my previous company that was more of a design firm would be like, he could draw, but he's not really a designer. he's a researcher or something.
Right.
But that is the cool part. That is, and that's where you get more specialization, right? You would, people who design soft goods are going to know the intricacies of making patterns to make a bag come together in a certain way.
Right.
Right. People who design electronics, maybe somebody who designs soundboards will understand why you would use a knurled knob versus a smooth one.
Right. So then the personal expertise come in. So let's, I got it. I know how to make this concrete.
Yeah. Nice.
Tell us about something cool that came to life through either your direct implementation or your strategy and instruction and direction. Give us something cool. You don't have to give exact specifics.
That is the question, because a lot of stuff is secret, so you can't say it.
What's not secret?
I'll give you an example that, and I won't use the company name.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'll think of a cooler thing that we made later. It did, you know how Spotify has collaborative playlists?
Yes.
I did come up with that idea in 2004. But it's kind of obvious to anybody who would have thought.
Yeah, right.
Here's one that maybe will demonstrate the whole four-part process.
Perfect.
Okay. I did a project about safety for cars a long time ago.
Got it.
One thing that we noticed is that in these couples with young kids, a lot of the men, putting in the car seat, installing the car seat for the first time is the man's job.
Mm-hmm.
And something that a lot of men would do is sit or stand on top of the car seat to get it in as tightly as possible,
mm-hmm.
with their knees on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
They would say, I can feel with my weight on top of it that it's in there good.
Right.
Right. But we noticed that pattern. We saw a bunch of different people did it. I said, oh, that's funny. That's a concrete observation.
Great observation.
Right. Our interpretation is people need sensory feedback that the safety actions are doing.
Is super tight.
Even that their actions are actually being executed.
Right.
Right. So a direction, you would say, Give people sensory feedback that the safety actions that they're taking are effective.
Right. Make sure there's a tactile feedback to the tension. Like, oh, I feel that being tight now.
Right. And so one of the things that we realized is that safety is about feeling safe.
Yes.
We think that it's about being safe.
Yes.
Which it is.
Yeah.
But more than that, it's about feeling safe.
The seatbelt snug on me. I'm secure.
So actually what we did... In the end, a design that we made is seatbelts are all regulated by law, right? But we actually increase the thickness of the seatbelt tongue that goes into the buckle.
Uh-huh.
So that when you put it in and click it, it goes chunk, and it clicks heartily.
Yeah.
It's just as safe. They're all legally specified to stay shut when you get in a crash,
and they
right?
can be super narrow, because some seatbelts do have super narrow tongues.
Right. But making this thicker thing that when you click the seatbelt in, it goes click.
Yep.
And you feel safe.
Uh-huh.
But if we had just said, hey, how can we make people feel safer in a car? We may never have gotten to that.
Right. Because it's how people perceive the safety.
Right. And only by saying, it's weird that all these guys stand on their car seat. That's how we got. We didn't say, oh, so we should make it easier for them to put in the car seat.
No.
That helped us come up with a difference.
No, it's they should make it, it. You should make them feel more secure that this device, which by the way would work exactly as well, no matter how it was configured, but you're like giving the tactile feedback right. of it going clunk.
Yeah, but that's just one. I mean, there's tons of different ways you could apply that inside the interior of a car and the safety features of a car, right?
Right.
Give me sensory feedback.
Right.
You know?
When I close the doors in my BMW, they go, gong. Nope. They close and they go,
bzz. Nice.
They got soft closed doors. It's so dope, dude. I just sort of like push the door at it and it just goes, bzz. I'm like, yeah, that's awesome.
I'm trying to think of something else cool that I made that I can tell you about.
I love keeping in the automotive space because I'm a car nut. Like, when I press the power button on the trunk, God, I love this car. It's so cool. Mm-hmm. I press the power button on the trunk and it comes down and then it touches and you see these two little magnets, right? And they attach the magnet above the bumper and the trunk comes down and then it settles and then it goes, after it hits the bottom. And I'm like, that zzz at the end is so satisfying because I'm like, trunk closed.
You're like, that is closed. Trunk closed. Now.
Yeah. Which, by the way, if it just went straight down, it could, that was probably a conscious decision because we know that it could just go straight down and be closed, but it goes straight down, stops, and then jink.
Yeah. And then you're like, now that's
closed. Yeah.
That's closed. Exactly.
You're right. So someone sat there, and I'm sure the beta version of that just closed. And the Germans were like, it is closed. The magnets have it closed. It is good. And someone goes, is it really closed though?
So that, now that we're talking about automotive stuff, there's going to take it in a whole different conceptual direction. So I have a 93 5 Series wagon.
Yeah.
That's what I was driving here in.
And do you have the double sunroof?
Oh, yeah.
Panoramic, the double sunroof. That's the best. Yeah, that's the best.
You gotta give the kids some love in the back.
E34, baby.
Yeah, that's right. Cashmere beige metallic. For those that's keeping track at home.
So, no, that is, you know that color when you see it, because that is of its era.
Very much so.
10 years ago, you'd be like, ew, gross. Now you're like, classy, right?
I had a gold car before. I was like, ugh, I hate it.
And now you look at it, you're like, sweet. no one else has this color.
Miss me with that red shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it has a wonderful feature. There's so many things in like old cars where you're like, man, this was top of the line shit in 1993, and now it is a fucking horrible liability.
Yeah, yeah.
But it has a feature, you know, now cars, you open them, close them with a little remote.
Yeah.
My car can't do that. What it can do, you got that dual panoramic moonroof half open.
You got it
in the middle.
Yep.
You have all the windows open to different points and stuff.
Yep.
You get out of the car, and then you go to lock the car from the outside.
Yep.
If you hold the key over.
Yep.
All of the things in the car close.
Yeah.
And it goes through a little dance to be like, it takes forever. And every time I do it, I'm like, that's cool. And the reason I was thinking, I also have another technology in my car that I think is wonderful design. Because I appreciate these prosaic things around us, even if they're like quirky. You're like, that's not the highest end thing, but I love technology that's sort of selfless. And I have a Bluetooth cassette tape in my car.
Dude, wait. I have one in my bag right there because I was planning on buying a 90s S-Class and I'm figuring out how do I get Bluetooth in my car.
The cassette.
So I got the cassette and it's got the little dongle at the end of it.
I have it.
Well, I didn't need to do it because I bought a different car, but yes!
It works great.
Yeah!
And it's like, nobody's going to be like, the best innovation ever in the design museum, the Bluetooth cassette. Like,
no.
It's just a selfless yeoman.
Right.
No, it doesn't need any attention.
It was $11.93 off of Amazon or whatever it was. It was like when we were kids and we had cassette players, but we also had Discman.
Yep.
You plug that cassette thing in and I'm like, what, they make this with Bluetooth now? I literally just bought one.
Totally.
So cool.
Yeah, but I love that kind of design because it really is. It's just meeting my need. And there's something sort of like cute and quirky about it. Like it's so goofy.
And there's nothing to it. It's literally matte black plastic with some Chinese imprinted on it. And it's got a little light and a little dongle on the end of it.
Mine has a little door. So if you're not using the microphone, you can hide it in the tape.
I don't think mine has that.
I got the premium version.
Mine has an exposed. I never actually used it. Mm-hmm. I just bought it, inspected it. I'm like, this is dope, but now I don't need it. Mine has a little. It puts the USB charge port on the external side, so you can actually have it plugged in charged simultaneously. Yeah.
That doesn't work on mine because...
Oh, yours goes down and in? Yeah.
And then every once in a while, because it's a BMW, it just goes clean.
Yeah.
Taking care of my premium.
How long does it last, by the way?
The charge?
Yeah.
Many hours of playing.
Nice.
If you're on a road trip, it would be a problem, but like for me... And I have had some problems with them, like, crapping out, like, all rechargeable battery products. But I would, like, charge it, and then I could use it on my commute for probably a whole week.
Oh, okay, cool.
So 10 hours, maybe.
Nice.
Substantial.
That's pretty solid. What are we talking about? I don't know. Old technology being supplanted.
Yeah, something about it being, like, selfless and quirky. There's something that I like about that so much that... it's just like, it's fun. And I think that to me is like super important for where we're at right now. I joked about Alexa.
Yeah.
And like there's so many things, Internet of Things or everything.
The blank on, of
like,
things.
I have Sonos. You know
yeah, I know Sonos. Yeah.
So Sonos is great. And it does like, you're like, I have a need to play music in every room in my house at the same time.
Right.
Like, well, it was a wonderful solution to that need.
Yeah.
What you'll find, I like cars and audio equipment. I have a bunch of old beat up shit.
Yep.
That's like what I like. You'll find it's like, it works great. It sounds awesome. I can play music from anywhere. But now I have to use a screen to do something that previously I would just have to turn a knob to do.
Right.
And maybe it's just our generation. Probably not. But I think you're like, I'm spending most of my day interfacing with different screens.
Uh-huh.
And the cycle of design for UX products
yep.
is so fast that it's like a lot of the stuff that we have to use now, it sucks to use. If you had to make something and tool up a factory, it's the same thing as our cobbler before. It's like,
right.
it's going to take him 2 months to make the shoe regardless.
So
he might as well make it good.
Yeah.
Now it's like, and if I'm going to tool up the factory and then I can't change it, I'll be pretty damn sure that it's right.
Right.
Now, if I can update it
on the fly
every week,
I can crank it out.
I can just throw it out there before I do it.
Yeah, I could crank it out half-assed and then update the UX as we go because it updates wirelessly. Yeah. I mean, not to keep coming back to automotive.
Maybe we should have just talked about cars.
Maybe we should have. But touch screens, cool and flash on cars. But you know what? I want my volume control and my temperature control as an actual knob.
No.
Everything else can be something else. If I have to go in to find the seat heat, cool. I'll do that because I'm sending the seat heat when I start the car, right? But while I'm driving, I want my volume control a knob and I want my temperature control a knob so I could just go bloop, 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 right?
Yes. I actually told in my digital electronics class at McAllister,
yep.
I got into an argument with my physics professor at the time about the adjustment between a set of buttons, like imagine on a radio, up and down to tune it, and
stupid.
A knob.
Stupid.
And he was like, you think that the knob is more accurate, but it's only digitally tuning it anyway. So it's the same thing. And
no, it's not the same thing.
No, it's not.
No.
And here's why. The knob has an affordance. Let's say I'm tuning my radio and I have to go from 89.9 to 106.3.
Not tick, tick, hole.
Yeah,
wait.
Or tick, 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 tick,
wait,
tick,
wait,
tick.
For it's or even worse. Tick, hold. It clicks up one, clicks up two. Then it starts scrolling, and then you scroll past it.
Yeah.
Knob, you go 89, 106. 107, 108,
right.
107.9.
So the knob is a wonderful affordance because like it's a great interface where I can control it quickly, I can control it delicately, all in one simple to use thing.
Gen 2 what was it called?
iPod.
iPod. Yeah. Oh my God. That's how long ago it is. I don't remember what the thing was called.
Yeah, man.
Not the manual wheel. Yeah. The manual wheel was garbage. We all know that. But the touchy touch wheel was awesome because you move it like this and it moves like this. You move your thumb fast and it goes, you know? That was great design. And then Apple's like,
easy
to bye.
Yeah.
And apparently now, they're like hipster collector devices.
Really?
Like people like, oh, you've got like, I don't know. I think the biggest one at that point was like 20 gig, right? You've got one of the 20 gig Gen 2s. Oh, that's awesome. Up, down, center, and touchy scroll wheel, right?
Yeah.
Those are like collector's items now
because
they were disposable.
I knew this guy in grad school who was into like modding Newtons.
Oh, well, that's,
that's a deep cut.
Okay, Hey, Newton, remember The Simpsons? Hey, Newton, beat up Martin. And it goes, eat up Martha. He's like, stupid Newton.
Yeah, that was maybe a little ahead of its time.
I was interviewing someone else, another Silicon Valley kind of folk earlier, and he gave the classic Silicon Alley was move fast, break things adage. I don't like that thing. I'd rather move with purpose and get it right.
I think that's more a reflection of our like crazy times that we live in.
You got to be
that's the business.
Be first to market. Blah 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 blah.
Blah 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 blah.
Did we learn anything today?
I think so.
I don't know. Did you guys learn anything today?
I hope so.
What are we? How do we?
I learned that dolphins have names.
Yes,
so
the dolphins
I'm
names.
Happy.
I learned that design is less about making things. things than about coming up with new definitions of old words.
Well, that may or may not be true, but
how do we want to end this? I don't even know.
Oh man.
What, how, okay, perfect ending. Got it. You're out there. You're thinking of a change in career. Yeah. You were maybe doing something that's tangential to this and you want to get into it. Lucas, how do we do that? Do we have to go to school or do we have to apprentice or do we have to just get our hands dirty?
Oh man, that's a great question. Well, I mean, there's definitely, you don't have to go to school, but you could.
Don't have to go to school, but you could.
You definitely, there's plenty of things for you to read. You can check out the D School, obviously, and there's tons of stuff to read about. But I think that the best thing to do is to try, man, this is a pretty lame answer.
Do it.
You got to be a consultant. If you really want to learn fast,
yeah,
you got to be a consultant.
Yeah. You got to just go and just like
read up on it, get into your stuff. And if you are applying for jobs,
mm-hmm.
you can always do your own projects. So like I would say, make something, do something, design something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
key to it. And your portfolio speaks for itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I the one thing I wrote down on my little piece of paper that I wanted to get to, I think we already did, but that like as humans, we're all designers in a way. Mm-hmm. That ability to think, how could things be different?
Right.
Is something that we all do.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I guess it's right. I have like set procedures for things that I do, right? So it is, design is...
By design.
It's, yeah, well, it's like a methodology, you know? When I walk out the door to my apartment, I tap my left pocket for my keys, my right pocket for my phone, and my back pocket for my wallet. And I'm like, done. I can now leave the apartment, right? I mean, that's not exactly design, but I've made a methodology that I adhere to because if I don't, I leave my phone, my keys, or my wallet behind, right?
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. So we're all designers.
That's right.
Yeah. That's awesome. So if you want to go out there and what resources can people look at for some like just really, really cool stuff to look at?
Here's one thing that I think everybody should read. It's kind of old. It's a little dry. But if you were interested in the type of stuff that we're talking about, and you would get this if you Googled it too, you should read Don Norman's Design of Everyday Things.
Don Norman's Design of Everyday Things.
Old. It's from the 80s. But the concept of it, it's basically Don Norman, he's a crusty old guy who's like, why are these things so hard to use?
Uh-huh.
And that from there, you're like, okay, we can make them easier to use.
Okay. All
so
right.
Check that out.
Well, Mr. Lucas McCann, thank you so much for joining us. This has been exciting. I hope this
wild ride.
I know. I hope this roundabout bizarreness has been as okay for you as it's been okay for me. But honestly, I am a self-indulgent bastard. So if you're listening this far, I guess you enjoy my self-indulgency.
Dante's Masferno.
Dante's Masferno. Hashtag Team Lava forever. EVA forever. Lucas, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.